Welcome. Can you hear me? Yes, there we go. We have a full house today. Cool. Welcome to the Tips and Tricks for Web Developers session. My name is Mads Christensen. I'm a program manager for the ASP.NET team, or the Web Platform and Tools team. We build ASP.NET, IIS, Visual Studio, the web parts of Visual Studio, Web Matrix, WCF, stuff like that. Now, you've probably all done a lot of ASP.NET development, probably for many, many years. And you also know that it's a huge framework. Web forms, pages, MVC, and so on. And there are probably some things that you don't know about. And hopefully, that's some of the things that we can we'll look at today. Now, some of the stuff I'm going to show you, I'm going to start with some web form stuff. Briefly, it only applies to web forms, and then for the rest of the talk, it will be for everything. So no matter what if you use MVC or web pages or web forms, the rest of the talk will apply to you as well. How many people here use web forms? Hands up. MVC. Web pages. 10. Okay. All right, so you're an MVC and web forms crowd. That's cool. So I think we should see if we can play a little game of new feature, old feature as we go along. Well, let's start. So let's go with this guy. All right, so web forms. I'm going to show you a feature that is super helpful if you want to change behavior of different controls that are built into ASP.NET. It's called tag mapping. Have you heard of tag mapping? A single person. All right. So what I have done is that I have created a server control that extends the text box. Here's a text box. Super simple, built in, nothing special about that. But I have built my own extension, my own class. And let's just find it here. You all know about control comma, right? Brings up this guy. So here's my super text box. It's super simple, hence the name. It's basically just extending the text box, but it sets the CSS class. That's all it does. Now, it could be a component from Telerik or Infragistics or whatever, but in this case, I've just built my own for the demo purpose here. So if I were to replace this guy with my own, I would have to go up here and I would have to do register it and replace everywhere I have a text box. I would have to do this trick, replace everything. But I don't have to. I can go into the web config. Let's hide this guy. And I can do tag mapping. So what I'm doing here is that I'm telling, you can see this, right? Line 14 here. So what I'm doing is I'm saying the type text box should be replaced by my super text box. Actually, let's run this. Here's the text box. I'm going to comment in this guy. Do F5. And here's my super text box. Now, I've added some CSS styles to the super class name here. But that's a really, really easy way for me to do this for all the text boxes in my entire site. So the question is this a new feature or an old feature? New feature. Old feature. Yes, it's an old feature. It was introduced in ASP 2.0, I think. But we know that not a lot of people use it. And it's kind of it's a shame because it's pretty cool. Okay. Let me move on here to routing. Now, this is a web forms app. But look at this URL. It does not have a .aspx extension. And it doesn't because I use routing. So routing was introduced back when MVC came out. And I can now use it here in web forms as well. And let me go to Global ASX. For those of you who use MVC, this looks very familiar, right? I can go in my application start method and I can hook up my routes. And I do it just like this. It takes three parameters, a name. We'll get back to why we want to specify a name. And here we have the actual URL that I'm going to hit in the browser. And then the third argument here is the physical ASPX file. And we can do some complicated stuff. We can do tokens like you see down here. And that will insert tokens. And let's just change this guy here. Tag mapping 2. This guy. If I do a refresh, it now says tag mapping 2 in the URL. I did not have to change any of my code. And that is kind of odd. But it's because that when I create this site, I was hooking up my URLs like this. This is the menu of my web page. And it has this special syntax, route URL, colon, and then the parameters. And you can see this guy down here actually takes the parameters that I specified, the tokens that I specified in my global ASICs. So I can just add it simply like this. So I can also do this. Get route URL does exactly the same thing, or simply just get route URL. It does the same thing. This is just because I have a control here, an ASP control, where I can do this. If I had any other, if I created my links manually or whatever, I could do it with a get route URL. And let's go to this page. So you'll see here I can change code. It changes. It's pretty cool. So I don't have to do query strings. I can do this instead. And here's two different ways of doing the same thing. Again, I can use the special little thing here, route value colon, and then whatever key that it is I'm accessing, country and year. Or I can do it as I do below here. This is looks very similar to if you do like request.querystring or request.form or so on. And here's the example of creating a link with a getRoute URL. So you don't see any syntax highlighting in here, actually. That's a funny little bug that we've always had in web forms. We did not provide IntelliSense when it's inside an attribute. You see here, href equals. If you do a code nugget, as we call it, inside an attribute, you don't get any IntelliSense. That's fixed for VS 11, by the way, just to mention it. So routing is pretty cool and very powerful, and you can get going very, very easily. Get those pretty URLs. So this is for ASP.NET 4. It was born in MVC, and it was ported into the core framework in ASP.NET 4.0 a couple of years back. Okay. Let's play with video. I have a video right here. This is a feature. There we go. New feature, yeah. All right, so I'm going to drag a video on here and add controls, and let's take a look at this. we now have this beautiful video running. And this is maybe something that you've run into as well. The problem is that if you run IIS, which you do, if you do ASP.NET, so I assume that you all do that, doesn't matter which version of IIS you run, you will run into this problem when you serve HTML5 video and audio and CSS3 font embedding. It cannot load. It simply will not load. And if we look at the network here, this is what we get. It says aborted. If you do it in Firefox or Chrome, it will say 404, not found, for a simple reason. IIS doesn't know what MP4 is. So it says, oh, I don't know what that is. I'm going to ignore it. It doesn't exist. It's really annoying. Apache's got the same problem. It's not an IIS-specific problem. But we need to tell it that we're going to deal with files that we don't normally use or we didn't use before HTML5 came aboard. So what I can do is that I can manually register all the MIME types. That's what it's called. All the types, all the file extensions. I can do that directly on the IIS, IIS 6, 7, whatever. Or I can do it in the web config. And I can do it manually, or I can do a NuGet package. And we have one here called HTML5 setup. There we go. Let me just show you that it should fix the problem. Okay. So what did it do? It added this to the system web server extension element in the web config. That's all it is. It registers all the new file types that you kind of need to do all the CSS3 HTML5 stuff, but it just did it automatically. The next version of IIS will have this built in, so you don't have to do this step. But if you're using Windows Server 2008 or 2008 R2, you need to do this. Health monitoring. Have you ever, let me ask you, how many people here knows about health monitoring? 5, 10 of you? Cool. So health monitoring is a way to do logging. And I've used it a lot because when I do small websites, I'm not lying when I say that I've actually created a website for a dog. Here's my dog, here's a picture. Contact the dog on this phone number. That was it. It didn't really do much, and there's a lot of websites like that. And I just wanted some simple error reporting. Like, when something goes wrong, just let me know. But I didn't want to have any big frameworks install Log4Net or some of that stuff that might write to a SQL server or something like that. I just wanted basic, just alert me, just tell me somehow that I've got an error. So what I can do, let's just throw an exception. That's all this button does. It throws an exception. Without writing any code at all, I can go to web config. And there's something called health monitoring. I can enable it. And here's what I've set it up to do. I'm using the built-in email provider. And that's about it. And then I say, give me any error, all errors. That's also like an event that's kind of built in, all errors, it's called. This tells the health monitoring, just email me when any error occurs. And down here, I've set up my email stuff here. But I've done a trick because I'm actually, I'm just developing, so I don't necessarily want to send out emails right now. So I said, okay, for this demo or when I'm developing, just take all the emails and not send them out through SMTP, just put them on disk. Put them in this folder. This folder. It's empty. Okay? me save this. Go back here. Gonna throw an exception. And now I have this nice error message. And it tells me everything I need to know. It was an unhandled exception. It was on line 19 of this file, and here's the full call stack, and so on. And I can even tell it to buffer. So I can tell it, don't send me emails all the time, only like every day or every 2 minutes, and then buffer all the different errors that comes in so I don't get flooded with emails. So that's a really, really useful thing. I've used this for a lot of small sites where I didn't want full login capabilities, just very simple stuff. New feature or old feature? New feature. A couple. Old feature. Yes. Well, you're absolutely right. This has been in the product since ASP.NET 2.0. And no one uses it. I think I'm the only one who uses this. I don't know why. It's awesome. But sometimes you're looking at your app might have different requirements and you actually need to do proper locking, right? You need to do something cooler than just a simple email. And whenever that occurs, I always use Elma. Who in here knows Elma? Hands up. Yes. That is a cool little component here. I've added it through NuGet. Super simple. It says that my web config has been updated. And here's what it does. It adds some modules to my server, and that's about it. I'll just build here once. Now let's go back and throw an exception. Oh, did I disable health monitoring? They will work together. It's just, there we go. I'm going to throw the exception. Same thing. But now, I can do this. I now have a list. I'm just using the in-memory thing. This is like if you do trace.axt, for instance, it's kind of the same thing, same experience. And it'll give me actually more details. So it gives me the full thing, nicely colorized here, but it also gives me all the server variables. So again, without writing any code, I can just add this thing, and I get a very nice error reporting. I can hook it up to SQL Server to write to XML files, text files, or whatever I want. I'm just demoing here the in-memory thing. Okay. So, a lot of times we have to do stuff in Firefox or Chrome or something that's not IE because we want to use Firebug or whatever. And this guy. I have a little plugin here where I can say view in Firefox. And then it says, are you sure? Oh no, it's going to update. How sucky is that? There we go. Okay. So, I now run the latest version of Firefox. And, simple page. Let's open Firebug ones here. So, we do have some problems on this page. The problem is that we do have a little too many requests in order to run this page. And we haven't really set up any browser caching. And that's not very smart. So I'm going to use YSlow here. How many people here use YSlow or know about it? Okay, a fair amount of you. All right. So YSlow lets us view some performance issues that we might have. And it also gives us this view right here, which tells us that we have 13 requests. Two of them are style sheets. And that's the first chart here. The other chart says, okay, when the user comes back again to visit the second time, our pager, this is what the user will have cached in memory. So, what the user doesn't have cached. So you see, it's only like a very few things that the browser will actually cache on a standard website. It's not exactly true. Browsers do cache way more than this, but it does it using its own logic. We do not tell the browser, cache all my images and style sheets and JavaScript files for a year. We don't tell it that, so it doesn't do that. It kind of just figures it out, whatever it thinks is correct. But because we didn't tell it, we haven't told that style sheets or images has to be cached, so that's why it shows up over here. So Wiselow gives us a pretty good score of 87. 87, right? Here we go. 87. That's a decent score. It's a B. We want to get an A. You get an A when you hit 90, but what we really want is to hit 100. How many people in here has hit 100 on Wiselow? Not a single one. Okay. So one of the things that we need to tell the browser is that it needs to cache all our stuff. And let's do that. That's very, very simple. I go to my static content section here. I can... Why did I close this one? Client cache. Oh, here we go. If I add this guy, I can say, come on, to use the max H. We're now going to use the max H HTTP header. The HTTP header is cache control, actually, not max H. But we're giving it a max H, and we're giving it a max H of 1 year. So this is the syntax. It looks a little bit weird. But this is a year, 365 days. And while we're at it, let's make it public. Okay. Public means that proxy servers are also allowed to cache this stuff in memory. If we now go back to our site, what I've now done is to say all my static content should now be cached in the browser for a year. That means all my CSS, all my JavaScript, all my images. I actually don't have any JavaScript here. Oh, I do. One. All right. Oh, yeah, it's web form, so that's the auto-generated one. Let's do an F5. And now we can look here again. And we're down to 2 requests instead of 11. So that's a kind of a huge improvement. This is for return visitors. But what about that icon, that fav icon right there? It's kind of confused about it. And there is a trick. I don't know why this is the case, but I know how to fix it so that we can get rid of the icon here. An icon is an image, right? It's a static file. So why isn't it cached? Well, as I said, I have no idea why, but I know how to fix it. So what I'm going to do is that I'm going to remove from my MIME map here, I'm going to remove the icon file extension, and then I'm going to re-add it. But, yeah, it's one of those things. I'm going to give it this MIME type. Right here. Let me clear the cache. Come back. And now it disappeared. So for some odd reason, and I have no idea why, ICO files are not cached using this technique unless we do that little trick with the MIME map. Now, for all of you out there that does this manually, or whatever way you do it, you think, what if I update my style sheet? Then the browser has it cached for a year, and they will, so users will not be able to see all my updates to my style sheet before that year runs out. That's a very bad situation to be in. And the same reason is why we have not enabled this by default on the web server. Because it will break sites. So what we want to do is we want to bust the browser cache whenever we make an update. So let's do that. This is something that's not necessarily super easy, but let's do an example here with the style sheet that I've got. I've got two style sheets. I have an extension method for a string called fingerprint. And again, notice that we don't get any IntelliSense because I'm inside an attribute fixed in VS 11. But here we go. Let's just, here's the components. Here's my style sheets, right? These are the two style sheets. I've now added the fingerprint method. And let's just do this actually. Now our style sheets have this weird little version number after it. Now this is my custom implementation. So what I've done is that I look at the file, last write time of the file, and this is basically just the ticks, like the date time ticks of that file that I append. And every time the file is updated, this is reflected right here, and those numbers change. And that tells the browser to now go get the new one, because every time a query string or any part of a URL changes, the browser no longer knows it and will have to go get a new copy of it, because it thinks it's the first time that it is going to access it. So that's why if we want to do the 1 year expiration for the cache, we need to do this as well. Okay. I can just show you briefly. This is it. That's all the code there is for the fingerprint thing. This is the fingerprint method. Okay. If we go back here to YSLOW or PageSpeed, how many here use PageSpeed? Is it the same crowd as use YSLOW? More or less? Not that much? Not that many? Okay. PageSpeed is Google's way of kind of doing the same thing. It analyzes our page and gives us a score, but it looks at other and different things. So let's just see how we are with see here at YSLOW, we're now at 96. It all looks very, very good. It does have one thing here. It gives us a bad score on gzipping. So let's actually do that. We want to get as close to 100 as possible. We basically want 100 in both YSLOW and PageSpeed. That's our goal. So if we go into the web config, there is something here called URL compression. I have set all these to false. I'm now going to set them to true. If you are using Windows 2008 R2 or Windows 7, this is on by default and you don't need this line at all. But if you're on server 2008 and you're running IIS 7, you need to manually enable it like here. So we do this. Come back here. We now get a 99. All right. So this looks pretty good. And you see, instead of our total weight is down from 63 kilobytes to 36. So almost half, because we did some gzipping here. Now, we still have 7 images. And we still have 2 style sheets. And we want to get rid of as many requests as possible so the browser won't have to make all these requests to our server. It's good for scalability, and it's especially good for performance. And if you're doing any mobile stuff, you know, if you're on your phone in the mountains and you're on 2G, every byte that needs to be transferred counts. And if you're as impatient as me, you're probably off some other site if you have to wait for your site to load, right? So what we can do, and you've probably seen some of this already, is that we can do bundling and minification. So I'm going to go to NuGet once again, and lo and behold, ASP.NET optimization and bundling. It basically just dumps this DLL file, Microsoft Web Optimization, in my as a reference here. But what I can now do is that I need to enable it. So just by doing this, nothing happens. But if I enable it, like this, and build, what it allows me to do now is to say, instead of referencing both of the CSS files, I'm just going to reference one of them. And it's going to look like this. So so you've probably seen this by Scott Gu, or if you were at my talk yesterday, is that we can now reference a folder called styles, and I put slash CSS behind it to tell the bundling that I want CSS files. If I did this, it would take all the .js files in the styles folder. Or of course, we don't want that. We just want this. So 13 requests, right? Two style sheets. And now we're down one style sheet. But you also see that the total weight dropped a couple of kilobytes. And that's because we removed the white space of all CSS and JavaScript files when you do the bundling and minification. CSS, that's like really, it's like 30% sometimes we can strip without damaging anything of your file. So it's starting to look pretty good from 63 to 34. And I'm sure that we now get 100. Yeah, okay, so Y slows down. Page speed is the next one here. Let's just refresh this. We get a pretty good one, 95 out of 100. Pretty good score. Normally, this would be fine. You don't have to go any further. But again, if you're on a phone, every byte counts. And one of the things that it tells us to do is to optimize our images. And on my page here, I did have some images. And I also had this background image right here. So that was a total of how many? Seven images, right? Seven images, yeah. A funny thing, we've been looking at a lot of real-world websites. And almost without exception, they could use a little optimization on their images. Sometimes it's just a few kilobytes. Sometimes it's megabytes. So Facebook and all the big ones, they all know this because all the bandwidth that they have to pay for. And the same goes for you. I mean, it's the same issue. The smaller we can make our images, the better it is, the faster they load, and the cheaper it becomes for us web developers to serve those images. And if you're using Photoshop or Paint.net or whatever you use, and you do Safe for Web, or if you do PNG, you say, okay, I'm going to do an 8-bit image to really make things small. And you think, now I'm done. I've optimized my stuff. You're wrong. You're very, very wrong. And this is kind of interesting. So what I have here are my images. And I have an extension for Visual Studio called Image Optimizer. How many people in here knows Image Optimizer? One or two. Okay. So instead of you having to figure out how to go and optimize your images, all you need to do is to right-click your folder or your individual image and say optimize images. And here we go. So if you can see these numbers, 6%, 21%, 61%. So even though I'm using small images, it kind of amounts to several kilobytes. And on the mountain, on 2G on your phone, this matters. On a more complex website with more images, this could be hundreds of kilobytes. And the cool thing about it is that it does not touch your quality of your image. What it does is that it runs through some web services that Yahoo created called Smushit, smushit.com. It also uses punypng.com, two really, really cool web services for compressing images. And what they do is that they run image magic and PNG out, like five different of these things, to really optimize the palettes that's used and all these things, to strip out metadata, EXIF data, all those kind of things. And it actually makes a big difference. So now I have optimized all my images. Let's just clear the cache. And we look here again. So down from 34 to 28. All right, that's percentage-wise, that was a big thing for the images, at least. It went from 18 to 13 kilobytes. And PageSpeed is happy with us, and it's all good. Now, what about these images? Even though I've just optimized them, it's kind of illogical to have them all, like to have them individually. What I really want to do is doing CSS sprites. How many people here do sprites or know sprites? Wow. Okay, cool. That's the first time I've seen that many using sprites. That's cool. So a sprite is a way for us to create one image that contains all the images, and then using CSS background positioning to kind of move things around. It's kind of complicated to do. But luckily, NuGet, again, helps us. There are several different frameworks out there that can help us. Request Reduce is really popular. I'm just going to use this one. That's it. It updated web config, sprite generator a little bit. I don't care about that. I'm going to build. I'm going to go back here. Hit F5. And it kind of looks the same. But if we now look at the actual source here, you can look what happened to the images. So it left the two top ones alone. I assume this is because they were bigger and it wouldn't really fit in the way this one works. But the last four ones, it did this weird thing where it uses CSS backgrounds. It basically created an image for me and now reference it like this. And it uses, you can see at the far right, it uses background positioning to do the trick. I didn't do it. I didn't touch any code. And now, it looks like this. So we get a little penalty in the image file size of 0.9 kilobytes in this case. But you see we're down to 9 requests. So it's actually starting to look pretty cool. And so far, the amount of code I've written is only that one extension method that did the fingerprinting, right? It's very warm here with the light. All right. I want to show you that I'm not bullshitting. I open paint.net. Let's just paint this black. Save as, and let's just call this test PNG here. And I'm going to use 8-bit, right? And it's 3 kilobytes. I don't think it matters if I do any. There's no transparency. All right, this is it. So I'm just going to save this. This is as optimized as it can be in paint.net anyway. Let's just, for the fun of it, do a GIF as well. 2 kilobytes. Yeah, it doesn't matter any of this stuff because it's just a solid color. This should be the smallest file ever. It is basically just one black pixel that's large. just include these. So these are the new files that I just created. And if I now do optimize image, here they come. Okay, the GIF was pretty good. But 56% could be scraped off of the PNG file. For the simplest PNG file in the history of PNG files. This is this should tell you something about why you need to do a little bit more when you optimize images. So check out the Image Optimizer extension. These extensions and NuGet and whatever I show you, it's all free, and it all works on Visual Studio 2010. This is 2010 if you didn't notice. The Image Optimizer also works for VS 11. Okay. So that's all pretty good. Now this site that I've built, I don't really update it that often. I update it maybe every once a couple of months. So why not cache it? And let's do that. We can do that on the master page right here. So these two lines, the only thing it does is that it adds an expiration HTTP header to all of my pages that uses this master page. And it says, until the first of next month, all browsers out there, cache the pages. And whenever the next first of the month comes up, the browser deletes it from its cache and we'll get the new stuff. So at least we can add some performance here for returning users that visits more than once a month. So let me just build this guy. When we go back. And now we have this. So this is kind of interesting. We went from 15 requests and 63 kilobytes down to zero. So now when you're on the mountain out there on 2G and you hit the website here, you don't even make a single HTTP request. Everything comes from the browser's cache. So this is scalable. This is scalability right here. And so far I didn't really write any code to do this. Just to show you, this is my website, just to show you that it is possible to get 100 on a live website, and it's also possible in PageSpeed. Just for the ones of you who think it's impossible, it is not. Okay. We can actually do even more. And that brings us into CSS and to look at some extensions here. Let's just close all this. So I'll open my style sheet. You might notice that this one looks a little bit different with all the color things here. I'm using the Web Essentials extension. How many people here use Web Essentials? Just a few of you. Okay. So Web Essentials gives me a lot of stuff, especially for CSS, like previews of fonts here. And a lot of the stuff that you'll find in VS 11, like collapsing and commenting and so on. So definitely you should go try that. But it does have some extra features. And since we're now in the whole performance thing, let's look at this guy right here. So here's my background image, right? The big ASP thing down here. I just did optimize the image, so that's a good thing. But what I can do is that I can base 64 encode the image directly into my style sheet. That's crazy stuff. So let me do that. So my cursor is in here. Yeah, I got a preview, by the way. Web Essentials, download it. But you see here, I get this little guy. I can set embed resource as base64. Again, a feature. And now, this is what you have. So you get a lot of goop here. And it is basically just, it is a base64 encoding of all the bytes that make up your image. This is supported in all browsers, IE8 and above. But because we're going to do we have to support IE7, we'll have to do a little trick here. I get this guy, and I can say make visible to IE7 and below, and here we go. So what I'm doing here is that I'm removing the request to that background image because I'm embedding the actual bytes of the image directly into my style sheet in text, in base64 text. Now this little trick, as most of you probably know, there is, believe it or not, there is a bug in IE7, and it allows it to parse CSS properties that has a star in front of it. And so does IE6. The star or an underscore. Underscore works in IE6, but not in IE7. This works in both of them. But every other browser out there will just ignore it. So they will read the first background and say, oh, cool, there's a background. Then they will go to the next line and say, oh, what is star background? I don't know what that is. I'm going to ignore it. So doing this is what we need to make this browser compatible. Let's go back here. And as you see, we are now down to 8 requests. Now, we gained a little bit on page size because a base64 representation of an image is slightly larger than the image. But since we went down a request, this is a very, very good thing. This is a good trade-off. I would only do this on images that make up my site, my master layout. And this was a background image that was on all of my pages, so I would do it here. I would do it if I have rounded corners, RSS icons, or you know whatever you have. Just embed it very easily like this. Okay. So that was the whole optimization thing. How many people here use Web Deploy to deploy your websites? Just a couple of you. Web Deploy is not always that easy to do, and there's a lot of problems, especially when dealing with XML transforms. So there was a couple of years ago we introduced the concept of XML transforms, which means that if you have your web config, you can now also have a web config for debug and release and all these different configurations. But it wasn't really that widely accepted, and it had some big issues with tooling support and so on. It didn't work for app config. It didn't work for any arbitrary XML file that I had. It only worked for web config. So I have a little extension here that allows me to add transforms. Actually, I have some in here. Why would it ask me to do that? And a preview. I can actually now see what my different web configs look like after a web deploy scenario where I've executed my transforms here. It's a plugin called Slow Cheetah. It's built by the MS Build guru, Syed Hashimi, who is also on the Web Platforms and Tools team, by the way. So why is it called Slow Cheetah? It was his favorite song by Red Hot Chili Peppers. It has absolutely nothing to do with the extension. You also have an extension that will help you do this very easily to... it's not an extension. It's a NuGet package that he's almost ready to have in a final version, a version 1.0, where you can actually automate all this stuff. It will use PowerShell. It will do a lot of things without you having to touch any code. It will generate all the web configs for you in a nice package that you can distribute and you can have it installed. It comes with some command line stuff and a lot of cool stuff there, all using MS Build. border radius, right? It's not here. And the reason it's not here is because where did it go? Where the devil did that go? There it went. I now have border radius. So, when we shipped 2010, we didn't have any CSS3 properties at all. Not a single one. But you can go download the web standards update. How many people here have done that? A good number of you. The only caveat there is that if you install Visual Studio in a custom location, if you don't just say yes and next to the installer, then this won't work, unfortunately. Okay, I build it, so that's why, basically. But here's the thing. Let's do 5 pixels. The thing is, you see this everywhere. Everyone uses one of these things that also come with the vendor-specific properties. Right? The WebKit and the Mozilla specifics. So what I can do now here is that I can just add them using this little add vendor-specific properties. So I don't have to remember that every time. That's Web Essentials, again, here. Helps us out. Gets us a little closer to VS 11. So what if I remember, if I forget one of these? Let me just save this file here. So I'm building my website, and I forget the WebKit one or the Mozilla one. How do I actually validate all these things? How do I make sure that whenever I go live that I have remembered all these things? You now have an answer to that. And I haven't installed it, I see. So let's do that. If you haven't used extensions before, this is how it works. CSS Cop. Anyone here knows CSS Cop? Yeah, a few of you. Cool. So CSS Cop is really, 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 really helpful because it helps us catch common mistakes. It's like FX Cop for style sheets. And I can run it. And look at the first thing it tells me. It tells me that WebKit border radius is compatible with the Mozilla border radius. So I should include it. So yeah, you're right. Let me do that. I use Web Essentials. Just take the missing thing in here. And there we go. Super, super simple and easy. This probably looks weird now. Oh yeah, I restarted. Okay, so did anyone of you see the page inspector for VS 11? A few of you. So page inspector for VS 11 is a way for us to run the entire site within Visual Studio in like in a browser, and we can map all the different controls and pages and server controls and whatnot from the rendered page in IE that runs in Visual Studio till the actual source file. It's really, really awesome. So, but it requires some changes to the framework. So you need to have ASP.NET, or sorry, .NET 4.5 installed on your development machine for it to run. But we can do, and the shortcut key for Page Inspector is Control Alt Enter. That's what I just did right here. Control Alt Enter. This is not Page Inspector. This is Live Web Preview. This is from Web Essentials, comes with this. And let's change the color here to go away here to red. And I save it, and the color changed. I just had to save it. I just did Control S. I didn't do anything else. And that's because by default, it refreshes every time I save a file or I build my project. Then it refreshes. So this is this is pretty cool. I can kind of work on my margins and see how it works. But if I want to do pixel pushing, which I do, in CSS, I have to make sure everything aligns correctly and so on. It would be nice if it just did it automatically. And I can now put live update CSS. Now let's take the margin here. It's not quite right. I want to change it a little bit. And I can use, through Web Essentials, I can use Control and my arrow keys, like we know from Firebug. So I'm going to hold down Control. My cursor is on, or my caret is in the 100, in a number value. And I just hit down and look at the live web preview. I don't save anything. I just move things around right here. It's pretty cool, huh? So super helpful for pixel pushing. So here's another little thing. You're used to, I want to add a JavaScript file. When you do that, you say add new item, and then this thing pops up, and then you search for it for JavaScript. And if you were like me and you want to add a CSS file, you do the same, and then you search for CSS. You do like this. Add new item. I go in here, I search for CSS. Oh, no, that's right. It's called a style sheet. So I have to do this, right? It takes forever. But now we just do this. Styles, add, new style sheet. There we go. So we can kind of move that step away completely. You'll find this in VS 11 as well. Not in the bits that you've seen so far, but we have completed the work on adding this, but way more intelligent than that just shown you here. So, Oh yeah, almost forgot. Did I show you the thing where I did show you the thing, but I didn't tell you what it was called. View in browser, and then I can select any browser I have. It's a plugin, and it's called this. WOVS default browser switcher. Now, all of these are free, and they all work for VS 2010. You should definitely go get them, because they are bring you much closer to VS 11. A lot of the features that we have here, the Web Standards Update, Web Essentials, all of those are also in VS 11 in one way, shape, form, or the other. So it is kind of a preview. Some of the stuff that we haven't included in VS that you'll find in Web Essentials will most likely make it into VS 11 at some point. So please go check these out. And also the NuGet packages. These are the ones I showed you. If you write any of the NuGet packages, if you plan on doing something, you can add dependencies on other NuGet packages. And if you want to do something with HTML5, you might make a dependency on the HTML5 setup package here. That will automatically install those MIME types for you directly. All right. You've been very quiet today. It's the last day and it's getting late, huh? Yeah. Well, do you have any questions? It can also be about VS 11, could be about IIS, whatever. What's coming? Have fun here. Yep. Oh, in the Solution Explorer? Yeah. So the way that the project system works is that it has to kind of add them to a solution within Visual Studio in order for you to debug the JS files. And whenever you're done debugging, they disappear. It's simply just how the project system is working and the way that we have to do the debugging scenario. It's not something that we wanted to do. It doesn't really give you anything, but it was necessary for us to do. No, it doesn't take resources. It's basically because we create some temporary stuff, some temporary files. So when you debug JavaScript, you're doing it through there. So. What? Sorry? It's only when you debug. Yeah, no, exactly. It's only when you debug. Yep. One more. Yes. So let me repeat the question. Question is, what about the bundling and minification for CSS? How intelligent is it? And what about the bug or I don't know if it's a bug, but it's a limit in IE that you're only allowed to have close to 5,000, like 4,000 something, selectors in a single CSS file. So how intelligent is the bundling and minification? Well, it's intelligent to know the order of which files should come first in the bundling process. So if you have a reset CSS, we know that that's a special file. So reset CSS or what's the other one, normalized CSS, that's a new one. We always put them first, no matter how they fall in your file system, because we alphabetically sort all the files that goes into a bundle. This is for both JavaScript and CSS. We do not count the selectors. So if you have more than 5,000 selectors in a lot of different files that you not want to bundle into one, we will create a file that potentially goes beyond that limit and breaks IE. Now, if you have 5,000 selectors in your style sheet, you have a whole different problem. Yes. Yeah, one more. All right, so the question is, when you do a file new MVC project and we add all the jQuery and modernizer and all those things, we don't have any CDN references. We actually have the file physically. So the question is, will we have that or is there a way to move it to the CDN instead of using your local files? No. It's a simple question. We don't have that. The reason is that you probably want to do all your development locally with a local version of jQuery. And then whenever you go to production, you want to flip the switch, and then you want to go from a CDN. And we don't have any mechanisms built in for this, for that simple reason that people do this in 2,000 different ways. Some people do it as a build step. Some people do it as a runtime thing, where they have like an app settings key that automatically triggers, but it's only in release builds, not in debug builds, and so on. So there's like 2,000 ways of doing it. And the other problem is that the CDN that we have at Microsoft, or the Google CDN, only holds certain files. It only has jQuery and a few others. It does not have you can't upload your own custom files to it. So if you want to use a CDN like Akamai, you probably want to add your own files up there as well. We have one more. Yeah. Is it possible to only do the bundling and minification when you're publishing, not when you're developing? Is that the question? Yeah. Yeah, totally. You can do that. So we're trying to iron out right now before the bundling and minification I've shown you is version 0.1. Right. It was kind of alpha early. So what we're ironing out right now is how the debug story is going to be. Because you don't want to bundle all your stuff when you're debugging. Because where did the JS era come from? When everything is just one minified goop. And you can't trace it back to your file. So you want to do some specifics for debugging scenarios, and we're figuring that out. Now, if you want bundling and minification to happen at build time, there are already a lot of MS build tasks out there for free you can download. If you go to setodream.com, he's got a lot of ways to do that for free. We have one more. Yes. So what about the Microsoft Ajax and jQuery. They're not great friends, you say. Well, what we've been doing the last couple of years is to move slowly over to jQuery. I mean, we're betting on jQuery, basically. And the Microsoft Ajax stuff, you know, from doesn't exist in MVC. It's all about jQuery, jQuery, jQuery. And we're shipping jQuery with web forms as well. So we're trying to move away from it. A lot of people still use it. It has like a ridiculous amount of downloads from CodePlex, the Microsoft Ajax stuff. So we're still investing in it, but we are trying to replace it with jQuery. They should work together, though, but there might be some duplicate stuff that might not play well together. And that's a little bit too bad, yeah. Yeah. All right. Fingerprinting CSS files, how does it work with the bundling? Yeah, that's a good question. There is an API, so the bundling is completely open for you to do whatever you want with the bundling. Let's go in here. So I can add my own bundles. Right, add, and I can. There are several different objects in there that I can pass it. I can create everything I want, but there is also a mechanism to ask a bundle. URL, what files do you have? Let's see if I can find it. Get registered bundle. That's not it. Get bundle 4. Here we go. And if I have a bundle, it was called, I think this has to be like this. It was styles CSS, right, that I used before. If I do this, it returns me a bundle. And a bundle is a list of files and directories. So I can do this completely programmatically and just ask the framework, hey, give me all, this URL gives me all, give me all the files that you have in that bundle. And what I've done is that I've done it manually. I've simply just go through the file system. I only support, the one I did only supports the folder concept, not the static bundles where I say, I want to bundle that file over there and that file over there. For that to work, I have to go through this method. Yep. But it's completely extendable. You can ask it for all these things. Yep, we have one more here. Oh. Yeah, question is, we have to use support IE6 because that's what the customer tells us to do. What should I be aware of using any of these tools? So Web Essentials, I showed you it has to make it visible for IE6 and the hacks with the star and all that. It actually has selector hacks too for IE6. So this is actually very, very cool. A lot of people hate to do the hacks because it's really ugly with the star and all that, but I can do this and I can say make visible to IE8 and above. Right? Boom. And same with IE6. So caveat, you know, use this. If you use the web standards update, this goes without saying, it has support for CSS3. Doesn't work in IE6. What it doesn't do is that it does not support the filter method. So if you want to do opacity, so opacity is CSS 2.1 thing. 2.1, I think. But it's not supported in IE6. So for IE6, you would use the filter, colon, alpha, opacity, something. This tool does not help you with that. So if you say, add missing vendor specifics, it will not do that. Image optimizer, same thing, no problem there. CSS cup, no problem there. Yeah, that's basically it. So Web Standards Update and Web Essentials, just know the features that are there for IE6 and be aware that it's not perfect. Okay, I think that's it. Well, thanks for coming, everybody. And if you have, yeah.